Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Our guest, Dr. Cobb, who's going to be with us today, his line's busy. You know how it is with doctors. So we're going to keep trying him until we can get through and reach him. So I wanted to start off, while we're waiting to get in touch with Dr. Cobb, with a comment by someone, Alfred Sloan. He said, "Our vast progress in transportation, past and future, is only a symbol of the progress that is possible by constantly striving towards new horizons in every human activity. Who can say what new horizons lie before us if we can but maintain the initiative and develop the imagination to penetrate them? New economic horizons, new horizons in the art of government, new social horizons, new horizons expanding in all directions. To the end, the greater degrees of well-being may be enjoyed by everyone, everywhere." Now, that was Alfred P. Sloan, Jr. that made that statement. When that was made, I don't know, but it was a bit of time ago. And I think that that's something that we need to keep in mind. We need to realize that we live in a time frame that is different from the 1940s and previous generations. We need to take and maintain an attitude of where we are right now is where we begin with changes, whether it's in our personal life, whether it is in professional, whether it is in an economical area, whether it is in a political area. We don't have to be stuck. We don't have to be in a positioning of sameness, but it does take a willingness to be present with where you are right now, starting with where you are right now, so that you can move forward and achieve in your life what is most significant to you. And I think it's so easy to get stuck in stuff. We all do it, don't we? We all wax nostalgic about this, that, or the other at one time or another. And we need to realize that we are in charge. We've got to be alert and aware of where we are right now and the potential of moving forward. We don't have to be stuck. So I don't care where you are, what you're doing, just be alert and aware to the fact that this is the best time of your life at this moment. If you're in difficulties, just know that this is the time for you to pull together your courage, your strength, and realize that you can make a difference and you can move forward. You don't have to stay where you are or just accept where you are. Well, I believe we've got our guest, Dr. Keith Cobb, with us. Dr. Cobb.
Good evening. Or afternoon.
Well, good evening. I'm on the West Coast. You're on the East Coast?
Yes, I certainly am, near Savannah, Georgia.
In Savannah, Georgia. Well, I know you are a very, very busy man, and I'm so delighted that you've been able to join us today, because as a physician, you see so many variables in life, and you're an internal medicine specialist, and you are a clinical assistant professor of medicine for Memorial Health University, the Medical College of Georgia, and Mercer University School of Medicine. You are very much involved with, and you also are a teacher for medical students and residents from these various facilities that I have mentioned. And you are a medical course writer as well, and a writer and reviewer for the Medical Journal Consultant. And you've also worked in hospice. This is something that I have not found a lot of physicians really having a strong association with. Every physician deals with death. But I think when you are involved with hospice, there is a whole different environment for a physician to experience. It's just something that I think gives you more of a depth about dealing with the reality of losing loved ones, whether they be a child, a parent, a relative, a friend. There's all kinds of things that you've seen. When you put this book together, The Grief Survival Handbook, A Guide from Heartache to Healing, what motivated you to do that? Why did you feel it was important to sit down and write about it?
Well, it's been about 15 years since I started in medical practice, and it was only a few weeks into my practice when I met a couple who that very day, two of their young adult children, were killed in a car accident. And as you can imagine, this was the worst day of their life. They came to see me before they could go to the funeral home to make arrangements or before they called any of their family because they were so distraught. And I was able to give them a little mild sedative in the office, and we were able to sit and talk and help them group their thoughts. But as I sat there with them, I thought of my own grandparents who many years ago went through the very same situation when they lost a 25-year-old son in a car wreck. And as I sat there, I felt very comfortable as a newly trained physician to take care of medical problems, but I was not as comfortable as I felt I could be at helping this couple. And I thought my grandparents would be better counselors today than I can be to this couple. And I've known this couple for many years since, and they have gone on with their lives, and they have gone through their grief, still recovering, but gone through it. But my grandfather was still alive at the time, and I made it a point to ask him how he got through those difficult times. And over the years, I've asked other patients to teach me, to help me to put together some resources for my own patients that I could give them and say, these are some folks who have gone through this. This is how they went through it, and I have a little resource, a book I want to give you. And that really is where it started, was from my own patient experience and my family's experience and wanting to put something together, which I had not really been able to find on the market for folks who were going through grief.
You have a quote by C.S. Lewis, and this is what he said, "In grief, nothing stays put. One keeps emerging from a phase, but it always recurs. Round and round, everything repeats. Am I going in circles, or dare I hope I'm on a spiral? But if I spiral, am I going up or down it?"
It's an emotional disequilibrium.
Yes.
And I think when we get into it, we feel like maybe we're making a little progress, and then it starts all over. I tell folks, when you first go through this, when you're first into it, don't expect much at all. Don't expect to see good days for many months to come. And our minds are so shocked, so distraught, and I would even say confused at times. And I think we are psychologically, emotionally confused because we've really lost part of our own reality. And if you think about those we love, those we are in contact with, they really do become a part of our reality. Our neurons in our brain are used to seeing that spouse we've lost or that child that we've lost. And when you hear folks say, I lost my husband months ago, but I can sometimes hear his voice calling me in the house, and I know he's not there, and they ask if they're hallucinating, and they're not. I guess you could almost call it that, but what's happening is the brain is so accustomed to that familiar voice and so in tune, expecting that person at a certain time of day or expecting a certain comment, which we are used to hearing from them, that our brain actually fires off neurons, and it will give us a little bit of that familiar voice because our brain's looking for it. We are looking for a part of the reality that we have lost. So, indeed, we really do lose part of our lives when we lose someone because we are so accustomed to them, and they are so entwined in not just our everyday activities, but indeed within our thought processes.
Mm-hmm. Very true. I can recall a number of different situations that as a counselor I have experienced through the years, and everyone is very unique in how they respond.
Absolutely.
Sometimes there's a very intense patterning right away, and then people seem to make an adjustment, let's say within a year. I've known other people that 12, 15 years later. They are still trying to deal with things. And I find it so important to have a sense of compassion, because we all have to deal with it in our own way. And that's something that your book goes into. And one of the very special people that you talk about in your book is your grandmother. And that she was, her name was Inez, and she had a couple of things occur. She had a very long life. But when she was 24 years old, her two-year-old son, Howell, was burned horribly in a house fire. And she had experienced death at a young age because her mom had died when she was 10. Here she loses her son at 24. And then, you know, her husband dies after many, many years of marriage. And you then have her dealing with one of her daughters when she's in her 70s.
That's right.
A child, and I think sometimes that's really hard on a parent, because if a child, you say, well, gee, I'm supposed to outlive my children.
Absolutely.
And when you don't, when they pass before you do, and you're in your older years, as your grandmother was, that can be very traumatic. But your grandmother really had quite a way of dealing with certain things. She was very grounded. She didn't forget, but she was able to weather these situations in her life. What would you say was the strength that she drew upon? Was it her faith? What was it?
I think it was several things. And I knew about my uncle dying at a young age, and of course this was before I was born, but I had never really thought to ask her much about it. It was a topic that I didn't think about very often. But when I had a child, my first child was born, and just a few months later, my daughter and I were visiting my grandmother, sitting on her front porch, and my daughter was playing on the floor of the porch, and my grandmother and I were sitting in the swing, talking. And there was a quiet moment in the conversation, and it took me a moment to basically get up the courage, because I was worried I would bring up some terrible memories. But I finally asked the question, and I said, "Tell me how you get over losing a child." And as you can imagine, when we're all new parents, that's a thought that's in the back of our mind. What in the world would I do if something happened to this new baby that I love so much? And when I asked my grandmother that question, she paused just for a moment, and she almost smiled a little bit. And I think in retrospect, she was smiling because she realized it was such a big question she could not give a simple answer to. But she went on to talk about it, and the first thing I remember her saying was, "I never got over it. I got through it."
Mm-hmm.
And she told me that even that day, she says, "I can think about it now, and it still hurts. But I realized I had other children that I had to raise, and I had to go on with life. And each day, one day at a time, I just would make myself go about things. And as you do that, you invest in those you still have. You invest emotionally. You go ahead and you do what needs to be done one day at a time." And she told me it was really several years before she felt like she had a normal day again.
Mm-hmm.
Years later, it would still bring up terrible memories when she heard a siren go off in the neighborhood, and it would remind her of riding to the hospital with her son in the ambulance. And so her advice to me was, don't try to get over these things. You get through these things, and if your faith is a strong part of your life, don't give up on your faith. You may want to, But be grounded in your faith. Be grounded in your family. Be grounded in the things that you know are important. And I guess we can apply that to so many situations and things that come against us in life, so many adversities, is at the moment you make the decision to do the right thing and you move forward. And basically that's how she did that.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that from a number of different people. One lady whose husband passed away from some rather unpleasant circumstances, and he had been gone for a few months, and there was some work that had to be done around the house, and she had a handyman that was assisting her, and he happened to be working on something outside, and she had this overwhelming sense of grief that just flushed over her, and this had been going on ever since her husband had passed, and then so she would just cry. And she goes out to see the handyman, and he looks at her and says, "Are you all right?" Because she was crying. And she said, "Oh, it's okay. I go through these moods. Just ignore me. Just do what you need to do." And
yes.
She got through it, using your words. She worked her way through it. And she herself wrote a little book. And she said, "You've got to allow these feelings to be. You need to allow that it's okay to feel grief." And she said sometimes it would hit her at the oddest times. It would be a trigger, maybe something she'd hear, or just a memory would pop into her head, maybe something on television, or she'd be in a meeting somewhere, and there'd be a trigger.
Or a perfume.
Right, right. And so there's these triggers, and she'd just tell people, "Well, I'm sorry, this is what I'm going through." Maybe she'd excuse herself, but like she was at home with the handyman working outside, she said, "No, I do this. I'll just suddenly start crying all of a sudden. Don't worry about me. I'm okay." But this is how she dealt with it.
Yes, yes. Well, we go through these phases. And as I mentioned, that first few days, for the first week or so, it's an emotional shock. It's an emotional numbness. I think that's our brain's way of protecting us from the reality of what's going on. I think it helps us get through the funeral. It helps us to adjust to what we've lost. And it's not but a week or two later, though, I think we get to that next stage that we all find that we end up going through, and that's the separation anxiety. We sort of take inventory of what we've lost, and we start realizing we've lost more than we thought we did.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we sometimes know someone seriously ill, or we know they're near the end of life, we're never really ready for it, because we just don't realize how much we depended on that person or how much we emotionally were attached to that person, even though we know we love those around us. But there's something so deep and something so inseparable that happens that we're never ready for that yearning phase, that separation distress. It's almost like a baby whose parents go out for the first time and leave the baby with a babysitter, and that infant has the separation distress. We sort mm-hmm. of go through that as adults too. And then that third phase we often go through is the depression in the morning. It's sort of when we've gotten through the anxiety, we've gotten through the anger, we've gotten through the yearning, and we try to accept it, but we're not quite there, and that's when that depression sits in for most of us. But you can back up and you can go through the numbness again, and there'll be days when you go back through the anger, just angry at life at what has happened, and the anxiety that goes along with it. But I tell folks, and when they ask me, when am I going to recover? When do I get to that point? And that's the final phase, is when we can get to it. But it's not that we wake up one day and we've recovered. I think we ease into that phase. And for most folks, I say, when you find that you are having a good day or two, you are getting toward your recovery. And when you find that you have more good days than bad days, you are into your recovery. Now, for some folks, that may take a few months. I think when we lose a spouse, I don't think a few months is reasonable. I think it takes 1, 2, maybe 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think when we've lost a child, there's no normal frame of time.
Right.
I think that can be a lifetime of grief. And I don't mean grief like every day is a terrible day. But there's something about losing a child that we just never quite comprehend or quite get through. We move on. And,
mm-hmm.
and you were talking about my grandmother. One of the most encouraging people, one of the most important people in my life, who I never thought of as someone who was depressed or who was grieving. But as the years went by and I asked her more about these things, she told me her son died just before Christmas, 2 days before Christmas, and she had all the Christmas presents ready and all the gifts wrapped. And so as you can imagine, every Christmas for the rest of her life was a difficult time of the year. However, I always remember it at her home as a very happy time. And I think what she did was she put her grief on hold when her grandchildren were there, when the family was there. And she made the most of that day, of that holiday, or whatever time we were there. And she tried to invest in those she still had time to invest with, those who were still in her life emotionally. And in doing so, I wouldn't say that because of her tragedy, life was better for her or it was better for us, but I would say in spite of her tragedy, that she made me a better person, because she was such an example of pushing through when you do not feel like pushing through these emotional barriers. That what an inspiration she's been to me and the rest of my life. And my mom's parents and my other set of grandparents went through the same thing with their adult child, and they too were such an example to me of how you push through it and how you find ways to cope with it. And we certainly can talk about some coping mechanisms as well, the people who you would think would be the most depressed, when I look back at their life, were the most encouraging and happy people I ever knew.
Mm-hmm. You yourself have experienced the loss of a child. Your wife went through a miscarriage, and you made a comment when you were sharing your stories, and you have some wonderful stories in here. Women who miscarry experience this dangerous period more than men. And what you were referring to was the period after this child is lost, because there's very, very deep hormonal shifts that go on in the woman's body. There's so many physiological aspects that produce a lot of drama. And many times people will say, well, you know, gee whiz, you can always have another child. But it is a real difficult thing for many women when they go through this. And let's face it, you guys aren't going to totally understand it. I mean, you're not living
it.
We are. And I think that kind of candor that you describe is really very, very significant. And it is something that's very individual in experience. But most women do, when they have this, there are exceptions, but most women will feel a physiological loss that is also emotional and mental, and it can be quite hard on them.
It certainly is. And not only is it the emotional loss of that child, but when a mom loses a child during the pregnancy to a miscarriage, the hormones suddenly shift rapidly, and that is because the body recognizes that the hormones necessary to sustain a baby in the womb suddenly are all shifted. And so the brain doesn't have to make those hormones, and it tries to put you back into a normal cycle. And when I say cycle, not just the cycle of your daily routines, but the menstrual cycle. And the body has to work through these things. But it's quite a shock and quite a shift to the emotional system, not, as well as to the body. I find women are very susceptible to depression, not only after a normal delivery with a healthy baby, but when they go through the loss of a child during the pregnancy. Those shifts are quite severe at times. And it was years later when I was writing the book, and I asked my wife if she would help me write that chapter and put some things together, and as we talked about it, and as she wrote these things, I have to admit, I did not realize the suffering that she was going through. I've had ladies who have come in who have really had suicidal thoughts when they've gone through this, and they feel like they should know better, and they do know better, that they know life's going to go on, but they can't quite control those thoughts. And I think that's important to let your doctor know that. And I think it's important to let other women know that even those thoughts of self-harm are not unique to them. They are absolutely common, I would say. They may be more common or more frequent in some than in others. But it's a very dark time that women go through during that.
Well, I can relate to that personally, not to the suicidal aspect, but being a woman that had a child. And I remember when I was quite young, I was 19, and there was nobody talking about much of anything when it came to a baby. It was just like, well, this is just what you go through. And fortunately, I was very healthy when I was pregnant. But the hormonal shift after I gave birth to my child was just so dramatic that I can in my mind today, and I had this old-fashioned country doctor, and he had delivered a whole bunch of babies in his medical practice through the years. He was in his 70s at the time that I knew him. And I walked into his office, and his nurses, who had been with him for a number of years, took one look at me and said, "You're going to see the doctor right now." And I didn't realize that I had a look about myself. And they told me a week later, he gave me some Valium because I was in some unique circumstances. And he said, "Now, will you come back in a week? You just take this." And what it did, it relaxed me. Because when you have a newborn and you're home and that baby's crying all the time and this type of thing, it's just one of the strangest scenarios, and your body just is going absolutely wacky.
Yes.
And it's unbelievable. So I have tremendous empathy for women. And when you go through this, and a week later I looked at him and they said, "Well, now how are you feeling?" And I said, "You know what? I can listen to my baby cry," because I was absolutely out of my mind.
Sure.
And that I learned from him that I had gone into the blues, as they often call it, after you have a baby, and it's all that hormonal adjustment. And your comment about that, and this can happen after a miscarriage, where you have this dramatic shift, and it affects your thinking.
It does.
So it's important to talk about it. It's important to let people around you know and to let your doctor know.
I think your doctor made a wise decision with giving you something to help you relax. And I suspect it helped you sleep a little bit at night,
oh,
too.
Oh, yes. Oh,
and often
yes.
What will happen when we go through grief is our mind is so engaged in trying to basically figure out what in the world is going on with all these emotions, with this loss I've gone through, that we just don't sleep at night. We can't turn the mind off. And it is so important that we rest. And often those of us who have been through bouts of insomnia, we note our health is not as good. We're not mentally as sharp. We may have an exacerbation of asthma, of angina, of our blood pressure. But when we go through grief, one of the first things I ask folks who come to see me is, can you sleep? Are you resting at night? Because if you can't rest, tomorrow is not going to be a good day.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could just help you turn your mind off just for 4 or 5 hours at night, just get a good night's sleep, the next day will look a little bit brighter. And often that's all it takes to just help people get through the next day is to
mm-hmm.
help them turn their mind off at night. And folks often will say, "Do I need to take an antidepressant?" And I always give my patients that option. And I tell them, I wouldn't take one the first week or two. Take something to help you sleep. See how this does. If you need something for depression, I will be glad to write that prescription for you. But I suspect if you can sleep at night, you can get through that. And I tell people, get active. If you are where you can, or if you're in good enough health, you can exercise. Make yourself get up and go do something. Take a walk. Go to the mall. Even go to a movie. Watch a TV. Do something to distract yourself. Don't feel guilty about distracting yourself. You're going to have plenty of days when you cry, when you're feeling sorry for yourself, and that's okay. That's part of the grief. And tolerating some of that pain or expecting it to be inevitable is part of the grief, and I think it's a key to getting through it. Tolerance is a very big part of that grief process. But also allow yourself to have a good day. Allow yourself to go out to dinner. And if you have friends who will allow you to talk about that when you lost, and you know, talk about that person. I also advise people, now don't overdo this. If you talk about that loved one all the time and it's all that dominates the conversation, your friends are going to get a little fatigued and they're not really going to know what to say or what to do. But as a friend of someone who is going through this, and I have done this with my friends or some of my patients who have come in and lost a spouse, I try to always mention that person and say, "How are you doing?" And I say, "I miss that person. I miss your husband coming to these visits." And I've never had anyone who's been offended or who I've brought up bad memories when I do that. But I think it's important. Allow yourself to have a good day when it comes, and don't feel guilty when you do. And I also tell folks, when you get to that point that you can, in a few weeks or a few months, try to find someone else who's going through this. Not so much just to share that burden or to have a sympathetic ear, but see what you can do to help them.
Mm-hmm.
See if you can listen to them a little bit. And often when we help other people, we end up helping ourselves go through these times as well.
I agree. And you have a wonderful chapter in your book, Can Any Good Ever Come From This? And My goodness, I've shared so many stories about people that have gone through tragedies in life. I've shared these stories and how good has come out of many tragedies. People have set up organizations or foundations, or they've been motivated to get involved in something that, just as you've mentioned, makes life better for somebody else. And I think that your book, and it's not a big book, that's what I think is so fabulous, that if you know of anyone that has gone through difficult times, maybe they're going through a grieving process, this, The Grief Survival Handbook by Dr. Keith Cobb, is such a wonderful publication, because many times people just need to be able to know that they're not really alone, and that they have this process that they're going to go through. With some it might be shorter, with others it's going to be longer. We're all very individual. But I think we need to be able to discuss these things and bring this information forward so that we have an understanding about the effects of the shifts and changes in life, of which death is one of them, and that we're all going to have that experience. No one's exempt from it. But there are ways that we can help ourselves and even help others. So, Dr. Cobb, do you have a website people can go to?
Yes, we do, and it's thegriefsurvivalhandbook.com. And there's some information there. There's some resources, some links to other organizations that will give you some free information. And you can read part of the book there on the website, thegriefsurvivalhandbook.com.
Wonderful. It's been a pleasure having you as a guest. Thank you so much. I know you're a very busy man, and I've been delighted to have you on the air with me today discussing something that a lot of people like to stick their head in the sand about. But I think it's important talking about it, because I've had some very, very dear friends that this probably would have been a wonderful resource for them to have available. Thank you, Dr. Cobb, for sharing your time.
It's been my pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Check out the Grief Survival Handbook. We'll be right back.
It's time to get your glow on. March 2nd through 4th at the Northwest Women's Show, a show that's all about you. 400 exhibits, 5 entertainment stages, over 60 seminars, and best of all, shopping. New this year are special theme days with prizes. On Fitness Friday, wear your tennis shoes. Then stay for Girls Night Out from 5 till 8, packed with wild and crazy fun. The Fashion Police will be there on Stylin' Saturday. And let your glow shine on Spirit Sunday. Meet actress and author Linda Evans, Dave from Dave's Killer Bread and his rockin' band, and Hollywood numerologist Glynis McCants, plus fashion shows from JCPenney, favorite authors Anne and Leslie Rule, and back for all 3 days, Seattle's hottest firefighters. Northwest Women's Show, sponsored by Safeway, BECU, Constant Contact, and Como TV. At Century Link Event Center, March 2nd through 4th. The Northwest Women's Show. It's such a girl thing. Learn more at nwwomenshow.com.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. If you're a first-time listener, well, I'm so delighted you've been able to join us, and all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and of course, after that, I'll tell you, I always like to know where you're calling in from, too. But I will tell you about something that's going on in your life, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. There's a lady by the name of Marianne Anderson. She has a quote, "Don't let your rear view mirror be bigger than your windshield." Isn't that a visual? I like that. I really think that's a good thing. Don't let your rear view mirror. Don't focus on the past. Look forward. Let that windshield view be there for you. And also, I wanted to share with you a cute poem. Here in the Pacific Northwest, in fact, we have been having a windstorms here, along with some rains and that type of good stuff. It's spring and getting into spring, and by golly, we're getting those edgy winter storms that come in. And we had power outage just an hour ago. In fact, it was something that I was concerned about doing the show because we lost all the power. Well, the efficiency of the people working on whatever caused the power outage, those people, I thank you very much because we came back online. So here we have these howling winds. The temperatures are brisk. We're supposed to have freezing temperatures tonight. In this poem I came across by Maribel Calabi, and I really like it, and there is a photo behind this poem, and it shows this absolutely gorgeous orange cat laying on a red pillow in front of this beautiful fire in a white framed fireplace. And this is how it reads. The wind is howling. It's wild out there. Snow is swirling everywhere, but my cat and I are as cozy as can be. He on my lap, and I am sipping tea. Isn't that a nice visual? Yes, good stuff. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-627-6008. Oh, by the way, I've got a recipe I wanted to share with you for a chocolate raspberry cake. Oh, I know, we always want to be good, and we don't want to have something that's deliciously decadent. Well, I got news for you. This one is a low-cal cake. That's right. Where normally, if you fixed it the standard way, it'd be 500 calories a slice. How about 187? You could do that for a snack, couldn't you? Yep. Okay, so have that pad of paper and pen handy because I will be sharing that with you. But before I do, I wanted to give you some tips on selling online. Now, I will have to be honest with you. I haven't sold very much online. I just don't have a lot of time to do it. But I have some friends. They swear by it, whether it's eBay, Craigslist, or, you know, there's a gazillion different ways that you can do it on the Internet. Here are some tips. If you want to sell and you want to get the most amount of money for whatever you are selling. Number one, they say ditch the fees. Now, there were, not too many choices up until recently for being able to sell things. Craigslist is free, but it focuses more on sales in your own area. Of course, eBay, we know about that, and Etsy.com. I've got some friends that sell jewelry on Etsy, and they're very successful with it. But there are fees with each item when you list it, plus transaction fees of up to 9% once you sell what you've got. Well, now there's a different site, and I didn't know anything about this site. It's called Bonanza.com. You don't have any fees when you go to list an item, and it charges a 3.5% transaction fee for sold items. Also, there's another site, ThingsPeopleMake.com. Now, this one is especially oriented towards crafters, and they sell handmade items at no charge. So you've got two new options there that maybe you weren't aware of. I know I wasn't aware of it. Also, you want to double-check whatever ads you run. You want to be sure to use a spell check or ask a friend to read over your listing before you send it out, because they did a study, and if there were ads with improper spelling and poor grammar, well, they did not get attention. So it just is very important your spelling and your grammar be appropriate. And typos, you don't want to have them. So if you need somebody else to review it, do that so it looks professional. And it's just like with email. If you have email where there's poor spelling, what do you think? You just feel people are sloppy. Are you going to want to interact with them? Not necessarily. So it's the same thing when you're running your ads. It makes a difference. Also, if you think that people, if you're going to sell online, if you offer free shipping, that's really going to get people excited. Do you know what? They've done studies on that, and it doesn't work. They had a research study that was done relative to products that were on eBay. They found the ones that were listed with a low opening bid and a higher shipping charge sold for more than the same merchandise that started with a higher bid but threw in free shipping. Why do you think that's the case? Apparently, the low price is what people were interested in, and once they bid, they would really get involved with this, and they would want to raise it and raise it and raise it. So it's fascinating what these various studies find out. Also, timing for your ad is very important. You want to have your ad seen by as many people as possible. So again, research. There's been enough time now where they've been able to do this. Online shopping peaks? Well, Sundays between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. is one of the hottest times. Also, people that want to check out for specials, Wednesdays at 4 p.m. And they say they found out that the Wednesdays at 4 p.m., that's when employees look to break up a mundane work week. So you want to post for ad sales. You want to do this during the peaks and time online auctions to end during them. There's really a sophisticated patterning here. It's sort of like figuring out when's the best time to go to the restaurants to get the best deals. It's a matter of timing. That's why so many stores have certain periods when they sell certain things, like your appliances, you know, the white sales right after the holidays, after the first of the year, all of these different things that go on. They really make it a science, and it's amazing the consistency with it. So once you find out that rhythm and that rhyme, well, you can save a little bit of money if this is something you like to do. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. Telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. And I wanted to let you know who's going to be coming on tomorrow. We're going to be talking about blood and money tomorrow. Mark Asatura is going to be my guest. This man has dealt with taxes, inheritances, and dealing with people that get real nasty during probate and all kinds of stuff. He's got some fascinating information that I think will be interesting to listen to. Why do people act the way that they do? Well, it is something that's going to surprise you. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about one of my favorite writers. Maybe he's one of yours, and that is Mark Twain. Debbie Prosser is going to be talking about information and research that her husband, who passed away a short time ago, put together in this wonderful book. And it's really a lot of fun. Mark Twain is quite a fascinating man. So we've got a delightful batch of guests. And if ever you want to find out who's coming up on the show, all you need to do is to go into show information right on the section for the Donna Sebo Show, and you'll be able to find out who's going to be coming up and what they're going to be chatting about. So let's take a break for just a minute. When we come back, I have some more good things to share with you, so don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-8255. 5604. You can also visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, I promised you a recipe for a chocolate raspberry cake. Chocolate and raspberry are just awesome. But if you're like me, you go, ooh, I want that, I want that, I want that. But I can't because it's got too many calories in it. Let's face it, if you're going to have a piece of cake of 500 calories, if you're going to have that much, or something that's close to 1,000 calories like cheesecake, if you really have a good piece, you want the good stuff. But then you have to think about how much it's going to take you to move that along. I have a friend that whenever she goes out and she has decadent dessert, she gets on her treadmill and she walks. She has it all electronically where she reads it out. She doesn't get off that treadmill until she burns up that calorie for whatever that is. That's dedication. I'm not that dedicated. But this is a recipe that I think is fabulous because it's easy. It's got flavor. If you love chocolate and raspberry, you're not going to go wrong with this. And it's really, really moist. So let me give you this ingredients. And again, this is under 200 calories a slice, and it is low in fat. You're going to need a package of your absolute favorite chocolate cake mix. If you like devil's food cake, whatever, go for it. If you like the fudge cake, go for it. But get yourself the mix. That's one of the reasons why this is so easy. You're going to need six egg whites, a half a cup of sweetened applesauce, one teaspoon of raspberry extract. I would add a little bit more. My preference. I really like a stronger flavor. You're going to need two packages of topping mix, and that is, you know, whatever that favorite of yours is. You're going to need 1.5 cups of fat-free milk, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, and 3/4 cup of fresh raspberry. Yes, good stuff. Okay, this is how simple it is. You're going to preheat your oven to 350 degrees, and you're going to need to use 2 9-inch round cake pans. And what you want to do, you want to spray the cake pans with the nonstick cooking spray, of course, and then your cake mix, 1 1/3 cups of water, or your egg white, applesauce, and raspberry extract. That all goes into your cake mix. That's 1 1/3 cups of water, your egg whites, your applesauce, and your raspberry extract. You beat it until it's smooth, and then you're going to divide the batter in between the two baking pans, obviously, and you bake it for about 20 minutes. Now, you want to test it. Depending on your oven and how it cooks, you may want to leave it in there a little bit longer. Sometimes ovens have hot spots, so you want to test the middle with a toothpick, and you want to be sure that it comes out clean. Now, of course, you're going to cool your cakes in the pan completely on racks, so you can go about doing something else. Now, on medium-high speed, you want to beat your topping mix with your milk and your vanilla until it's light and fluffy. And you put, well, your cake layer, one of your cake layers cooled on a serving plate. You spread it with 1.5 cups of your whipped topping and then top with the remaining cake layer. Spread the cake top inside with the remaining topping. And then you want to refrigerate it until it's ready to serve. And you can garnish it with the raspberries. Now, one of the things, and I know that this is a little bit different than the recipe, but if you wanted to use 2% milk, or 1% milk, that raises the fat content a little bit. but it also gives a little bit of flavor. If you want to have more of a chocolatey chocolate taste, let me see, Donna, I'm using Devil Foods or this fudge cake mix. What do I want? You might want to try something, and that is to add some instant coffee, just the granules when you're mixing your cake batter. There's something about just maybe a teaspoon of your instant coffee granules mixed in, and it's not going to make it taste like coffee. It just does something with the chocolate. And you might want to add a tablespoon of a real good dark chocolate that you have. I know I have Ghirardelli's powdered chocolate, dark powdered chocolate, that I have in my pantry. And when you add that, a tablespoon of that, it even gives it a denser chocolate flavor. Yes, I'm a chocolate person. So you might want to try that out. And also, something that you might want to do as part of the garnish for the top of the cake, if you're not too concerned about adding a little bit of extra calorie, take a fine grater and take a piece of chocolate that you have chilled in the refrigerator. And, or you could use chocolate sprinkles if you want. And you, but if you take the chocolate and you with a fine grater and just grate it over the top of your cake, that's going to give a nice touch, too, without adding very much in the way of calories. I just love to bake, and I think it's so much fun to have good food and food that tastes good to you that you just aren't going to feel deprived. I think it's one of the worst things that we do to ourselves is that I'm just not going to have anything at all. I'm not going to do anything like that. I just don't dare have anything of that nature because I can't just have one piece. Well, then have a party. Have a group of people over or take it someplace. Have your slice, whatever you want, and share it with other people. It's a great thing to do. That's what I did for years because I loved to bake. Oh, did I love to bake. And I'm a good baker. But I found if I kept it at home, I just enjoyed my own cooking so much that I could have ended up being as wide as the door frame. So I didn't want to do that. I'd give it away. I'd take it into work, but it was always fun sharing it with other people. Of course, you always have to sample it to make sure your stuff is as good as you like to think it is. This is Donna Sebo, and I know we're almost out of time here, but I want to share with those of you who are in the Pacific Northwest that I am going to be appearing this Saturday at the East-West Bookshop in Seattle at 7 p.m. I'm presenting a program called Power Mind, and it's $15 a person. I'm going to be talking about skills of the mind and also doing demonstrations with the audience. And then the event of events that I love every year, and that is the Pacific Northwest Women's Show. And it's March 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. And that's a week from this Friday. And I'm going to be presenting the Women's Forum on Friday from 1 in the afternoon until 1 to 4. And I'm going to have 5 speakers. And they are all dynamic. The information is listed on my website, DelphiInternational.com. And I'm going to be, while I'm at the women's show, and this is like my 12th year with them, I'm going to be doing many readings for people. And also on Sunday, I will be speaking. My topic is Spirit Talk, and that'll be 11:30 on Sunday. The Emerald Spiral Expo is coming up March 24th. I mean, there's just so many things going on. If you want to know what my calendar is, check it out on DelphiInternational.com. Well, I do want to remind you, tomorrow we're going to be talking about money, relatives, probate, all kinds of things like that. So tell your friends, join us, and we're going to have a good time. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't ever give your mind over to anybody else. And remember, you are in charge of who you are. Every moment of your life, take pride in that. Know that your circumstances, whatever they are, they're part of this experience called life, and you can glean good from just about anything in your life to leverage you to go forward to where you want to be. Donna Sebo here. Let your light shine. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.